And now, we follow the ever-evolving and continuing saga of the SML podcast.
Check if we have any emails quick as well.
Why don't you do that?
I don't think we do.
Why don't you do that?
We got... nothing. You gonna play guitar during the show?
No, I was waiting until we start.
Okay, well, we're starting. So, what's up, everyone? This is Joe. This is the SML Podcast, episode number 194. With me, as always, is Chris Huber. How you doing?
I am doing well, and I am opening a lot of loot boxes.
Oh, God.
Yep. Yeah.
You're overwatching?
Yes, and I've been Hearthstoning a lot more, too. I've reached the highest point in a Hearthstone season that I have ever reached.
Proud of you.
So yeah, doing good. And the deck that I'm using currently is like, it's all basic cards. Like, there's nice. Pretty much anybody that would want to play the game could pretty much hop in and just start like wrecking face.
And we have such an itinerary to get to today.
Yeah, lots of stuff, and we're not even doing all of it.
Yeah, I know. We're splitting up this week's show into two episodes because I have an interview on Thursday and you're not going to be here, so...
I'm going to be moving to Jersey.
Indeed, you're getting the fuck out of my house.
Yep. I will no longer be your closet gnome.
No. Oh, man, so where should we be? Oh, there's Rez. Try calling him again. Add to call. This is the SML Podcast.
I'm gonna have to start like, oh, that's what I should do, since we already have like people doing like intros and stuff like that, but I've always wanted to contribute something musically to the podcast. I'll just start recording like bumpers.
There you go.
So if there's ever like something where like, hey, we're gonna go to an interview, like we've got some sort of transitional thing.
Well, you have a guitar on you, play something quick.
I don't know, hold on. I put it down.
You son of a bitch. Rez, are you here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yay.
This one's incredibly out of tune, so I'm not going to play that one.
It does not require this much work to just strum.
I'll come up with something. Not right now. There's too much to do.
So joining us this episode is our good friend Rez. How you doing, buddy?
Doing pretty good. A little stressed out, but otherwise good.
What's stressing you?
Oh, Magstock 6.
What about it?
The fact that it exists and he has to do stuff for it.
Somehow they made me... Well, somehow they made me events department head. I don't know how.
Yeah, they have a weird way of doing stuff like that.
Yeah. I think it's mostly because nobody else wanted the job, so...
Yeah.
What events?
I'm also the one in charge of the theming and logo stuff as well.
Interesting.
Oh, so you're pretty much just like doing... the majority of the important shit.
You are Magfest's bitch for Magstock.
Well, at least for stock, yes. Yeah, this year it's Resident Evil themed. Magstock 6, Raccoon Tent City.
Oh, God.
Yep.
And once again, for the sixth straight year, I won't be there.
Nope.
Nope.
Because I am too fat to sweat that much.
Even though they have air cabins with air conditioning, but you'll probably just sit in them the whole time.
Well, that and we kind of already have a vacation planned anyway for the beginning of July.
Where are you going?
We are going out to Illinois to visit Ale Sean and wife.
And wife.
Hopefully you're not driving through Ohio.
Oh, of course we are. We have to.
Yeah, Sean has a very strong opinion of Ohio.
We all have strong opinions on Ohio.
Yes.
I don't mind Ohio.
Fuck Ohio.
Fuck Ohio.
One of the greatest video messages I ever got in my life.
Memories.
So how about we dive into some news here? We'll get the show on the road here. Let's start with the bit that would interest Rez the most. Mods are now available in Fallout 4 on the Xbox One.
Yay! Except not all of them work.
And the worst part, they disable achievements.
Yes, they do.
What?
Yeah, so all of my excitement for mods pretty much disappeared when they're like, yeah, you can't have achievements.
I give it maybe another week till somebody figures out a mod that disables that little flag.
I was going to say, let me know when they have a mod that allows mods to have achievements.
I know that like a couple of other my games with Steam achievements, people made a mod that, no, it was for Skyrim. Yeah, that somebody made a mod that re-enabled the achievements if you were using mods.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's only a matter of time.
It will happen.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, people are too well vested into these types of games where they'll just figure out a way to get around it.
Right now, Bethesda's mod like marketplace, I don't know, or catalog is filled with nothing but 12-year-old console kids begging for people to make like console versions of existing mods.
Like
just shader weapons, ones or
weapons, quests, new companions, stuff like that. It has to do with the memory restrictions on consoles, and a lot of the really, really good mods just cannot work on console. They don't have the beefy hardware to support it.
Yeah, people are expecting miracles out of these mods, but they need to get their expectations in check. We are not going to get HQ textures and all new air. Plus the fact that there's a 2 gig limit on mods. Yeah,
that's the biggest thing.
See, now, do you think that there are capabilities of doing modifications for it to just graphically look better?
Yes and no. At least on the PC side, there's always been where people are trying to run the game on a subpar system that doesn't quite meet the spec. So there's a lot of mods out there that will take like existing graphic access, like assets like textures and such like that, and they'll downgrade them in quality, but it's done in a way that it still looks really good. It playing with like the specular map, like how light reflects off something or such like that. You can definitely drop the resolution of a texture but still make it look really good. So it's entirely possible.
So yeah, because like what I'm curious about is, do you think that there would be a way for someone to modify, do you think it would be able to modify it so that the output frame rate, they could boost the frame rate past like what it's supposed to like cap itself off at, so that if you had it on like a higher def TV that had like a higher refresh rate, you could potentially push it so that it would actually work, or no?
Probably not. Mostly just due to It's kind of limitation of the engine. On PC, you could do what's called the script extender, which kind of hooks into the game itself and then provides the game with more function, which, of course, on console, is just not possible. They're not going to let it happen. But on PC, it's entirely possible. I actually have my rig hooked up to a 46-inch television now. And actually do have to play around with the refresh time so it doesn't, like, ghost all over the damn place on my TV.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's why I was curious, because I was just, you know, it does look good on an Xbox One. I was very surprised by that. But, I mean, I was just curious if there might be ways to make it look even better, because some people don't want to make the jump, you know, financially into doing a slightly higher end PC that could potentially run those mods so that it would look a lot better.
They definitely have restrictions put on for console mods. Like, I looked through the creation kit, like, just briefly to see, you know, okay, what's the differences between mods on consoles and what's on PCs. A lot of it is hard memory limits, like how many textures you can load or how many different things you can address or catalog, basically.
Right.
The things that are hindered the most are actually settlement mods, mostly because the game engine is only expecting to see so many index entries or pieces.
So once you start adding on to it, it's just like, I don't know where to put these.
The game gets completely confused and
runs like balls.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, that's always been a big thing. Like, even when before the official tools came out, people were running into this very problem with adding more walls and decorations and stuff. And it got to the point that if you had so many of them, they would start stepping on top of each other, and you would actually kind of lose access to the base stuff.
Yeah,
like the things that Damn. Come with the game normally. It's pretty messed up.
Yeah, because like even just like what it's prioritizing, probably it just doesn't know what to do.
Exactly.
No, I was curious because I just thought that would be really interesting. Even just, and like you said, I could see them doing ones that could potentially downgrade it so that it would run better.
I think the only important question is, does the Xbox One have a mod to shut Preston Garvey the fuck up?
I know there's a mod that you can turn off his essential flag and immediately kill him.
Wait.
There's actually one mod. What's the mayor's name of Diamond City? It's such and so must die, and it turns off the essential flags on a lot of NPCs. So you can just outright kill them.
Ooh.
Like Marcy, Preston, the mayor of Diamond City, a couple other NPCs are just annoying as hell. Much like shoot Marcy right in the face mod.
Nice.
Yeah, I will eventually give Fallout a legitimate try, but I've been waiting just because there's been so much other stuff that I've been wanting to play before then.
See, this would be one of those good episodes where Pappy would have come in handy about because he was always balls deep in Fallout, but
yeah.
I've been balls deep in Fallout. I'm like up to the elbow in Fallout.
Yeah, but you're like neck deep in the PC version of Fallout, which is a whole different beast than our peasant version.
Peasant version.
I know we're getting there, so am I it to it now.
I mean, the mod thing is still a huge step in the right direction. I mean, it does give the console people the ability to enjoy all this awesome, you know, fan created content that's been on PC for so long.
I think it's going to add a lot more longevity to game that some people aren't going to be used to having on a console.
Fallout 4 just overall, I think, is just like a step in the direction that Fallout needs to go. Like, a lot of people bitch like, oh, the skills are gone. It's more of a shooter than an RPG. Well, in a 3D space, getting rid of the skills and streamlining it down to the whole perk system was pretty much the natural evolution that the game series would have to go in a 3D space. I mean, it just doesn't, at least in a gameplay aspect, it doesn't make sense that you're more or less using the game like as a first-person shooter. I mean, it's not really, but it kind of is. But so why would you shoehorn in these RPG skill elements that they don't really kind of fit too well?
Well, didn't they bring a lot of the RPG stuff back in Far Harbor?
Not really, no. It's still the perk system and such. In the RPG aspect is that there's lots of different open-ended resolutions.
See, I'm not the only one who can't.
Words, you know, the thing.
There's a lot of different ways you can resolve a lot of the conflicts in there. There's that RPG aspect. It's not linear. Oh, this is, you know, the path you're going to go, and here's your three ending buttons you're going to hit, you know, like Deus Ex. And there's no ending per se to Far Harbor, just like the original, you know, the main game with the main quest. It just, you resolve things how you want them to go, and then you kind of move on to the next thing. And there's a lot of stuff in Far Harbor. I will say Bethesda overall, like with their writing, they definitely took a cue from the original games, like 1, 2, in mostly in their references. Like if you go to Rock Point Camp, which is the best example of how you should do a pop culture reference in a game. And even Brian Fargo, who did the original Fallout 1, he's like, if you're going to make a pop culture reference, you need to put it in there in a way that if they don't get the reference at all, it still sounds interesting enough that they want to pay attention to it. Like, Rock Point camp is filled with like with holotapes, and if you get to reading in them, they start mentioning names, and some of us wrestling fans instantly pick up on it. The whole camp is just an entire reference to the Wyatt family from WWE.
Yeah, I even went as far.
Yeah, Husky Harris, which was the wrestling name of one of the members of the Wyatt family before he joined. They created the whole Wyatt family. It's hilarious if you're into wrestling. But if you're not,
isn't the guy's name like Bray Husky?
Yes, yes.
Then his minions Braun, Rowan, and
I can't remember the last one. Never can.
Was it Harper? Hey, did they use Harper or did they use Luke?
No, Luke. It was Luke. Okay. Yeah, it was Luke. And if you go another one, like if you go swimming way the hell out into the middle of the ocean, there's a floating door with two skeletons. One is sitting in the water. Consequently, if you go east of that, you'll find another door and it's recreated with teddy bears. Because the whole teddy bear posing thing has kind of been an ongoing joke with Fallout 4.
Yeah.
It's like finding the hidden Mickeys at Disney World.
Yeah, fucking, they are insane with teddy bears in Fallout 4.
There is another vault in Far Harbor, Vault 118, and hands down, probably the funniest vault in the entire Fallout universe.
Do tell.
I have to think about how to explain it where it's not a spoiler.
Way. Okay, spoiler alert for Far Harbor ahead.
Yeah.
Skip forward 5 minutes if... Don't want to
hear
this.
Yeah, it's about 5 minutes. So basically, Vault 118 started, the whole experiment was it was going to cram people of high wealth and low wealth without telling them that this was going to happen. One half of the vault was going to be very luxurious and wealthy and, you know, really with robot servants and everything, whereas the lower income half would be half finished, shoddy, low supplies, overly crammed with people. But once the wealthy wing was done, the guy that was funding it, who owns the hotel that's on top of it, just said, nah, screw it, I'm not going to pay Vault Tech anymore, and they stopped construction. So they moved into the wealthy part of the vault. One of the scientists that was in there said, hey, we can live forever by putting our brains in RoboBrain chassis. And they did. So the only two human people were the overseer and one scientist. The scientist died, so it was left with this overseer and a bunch of robo-brains running around. And eventually the overseer just got pissed off at all the robo-brains and committed suicide. The way you get called to the vault is they request a detective to investigate a murder. And as soon as you go into the vault, there's a murdered robo brain with its brain smashed out and sitting there on the rug with all these robo brains crowding around it. They're so cliche and the personalities of the people that go into it. And you literally have to do a murder mystery to find out who killed the robo brain.
Oh, my Lord.
If you remember Fisto from Fallout New Vegas, there is a robo brain that you can fuck.
Oh my God.
And it's needlessly hilarious. I was laughing the entire time.
Oh my God.
They really knocked it out of the park on this DLC. It's so damn good. Like you have the Nuka-Cola competitor Vim. They have their whole factory and this whole backstory about how Nuka-Cola was sabotaging their vending machines or smashing their bottles in grocery stores and stuff. There's actually two Vim branded power armors you can find. The whole conflict between the Children of Adam, the synths, and the natives of Far Harbor it's really well written. I'm still finding new stuff throughout. Oh, there's a fucking reference to Pet Cemetery in there.
No, Jesus.
And it looks exactly the way it's described in the book. And one of the tombstones, if you look at it, has the name of the cat, the main cat of Pet Cemetery on it. It's so filled with well-written references and little things that just aren't even marked by quests. You just can stumble across them and you look, it's like, oh, that's pretty damn interesting.
So basically you could say that Far Harbor is DLC done right.
It's the Shivering Isles for Fallout 4, basically.
So let's shift gear to a game that did DLC horribly. Payday.
Okay, what happened here? I haven't played this in ages. The news came out
that Overkill has completely reacquired the rights to the Payday franchise from Starbreeze.
They bought the rights for their own game back from the publisher.
Yes. And not only have they confirmed that Payday 3 will be coming, but they have removed all the microtransactions from Payday 2.
Okay.
So a lot of people are thinking, is this Overkill finally doing right by its fans, or are they just trying to save face before Payday 3 comes out and fuck the audience all over again?
I think I'm in the save face camp on this one.
Column A, little column B.
I don't know. I want to be hopeful and say column A, but it's hard not to feel like I've gotten screwed over by them enough to think maybe column B.
Yeah, I'm firmly column B on this one.
Because, like, I really enjoy Payday. I convinced you and Pappy to get it so that we could play it together. I think it's one of those games that if you have a group of people, it's really, really fun. However, you know, obviously the AI sucks balls, but I think if the DLC and the experience system and some of the skill trees and just everything was kind of worked on at the level of some other games that I have played by even same size, if not smaller, teams, I feel like the game would have had a lot more potential. And I wouldn't feel like I had gotten screwed over.
Yeah. I will say, if Payday 3 does become a reality and comes to consoles, I absolutely will not buy it.
I don't blame you.
I got burned on Payday 2 for the 360 because they said that they would keep it updated, they would fix any issues and glitches. They never did. And then Payday 2 Crime Wave Edition on the Xbox One, PS4 was supposed to be a whole new leaf for Overkill, and they were going to keep it up to date, and it was going to be, you know, patched and fixed and everything else, and it was a shit show.
Yep, I'm betting they probably went the same route that Valve did with TF2, where Microsoft was running the server, so all patches and updates had to go through Microsoft Q&A.
On the 360, yeah, but not on the Xbox One.
That's just them fucking up, I guess.
Yeah, that was just them totally fucking over console fans. And many of them who were burned twice by buying it once and then believing they were going to do it right the second time around.
Yeah.
Mm.
And gifted it to someone.
Jeez.
Bastard.
Yeah.
Speaking of games that are kind of getting dicked over, the newest word is that the Steam store page for Dead Island 2 has been removed. There is speculation that they may have just completely canceled Dead Island.
Maybe.
No confirmation, but the fact that it's completely removed from Steam is not a good sign.
Well, when was its supposed release date?
I don't know, like a year or two ago.
Oh, okay.
it was supposed to be out a while ago, and it got bumped from developer to developer. Jaeger dropped out, and then Sumo Digital was brought on, and then there's just been nothing heard for a while.
Oh, so it went the route of Prey 2, then.
Which, funny enough, there's rumors that Prey 2 is going to show back up at E3 this year.
If only Bethesda does it right.
Yeah, we'll hope.
They've been doing it well. I mean, they...
Look at Doom.
Oh, God, yes. You've probably seen this, Joe. Like, a lot of musician friends of ours just completely geeking out.
Oh, this is so cool.
Yeah, and not to mention the God-tier level audio Easter egg in the Cyber Demon track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that... For those that don't know, if you take the soundtrack for the Cyber Demon in the new Doom and you take the audio file and tell it to spectrum analyze it, so it just draws colors for everything. Hidden in there is perfectly formed 666 and upside down pentagrams. And he purposely just put that in there just as a hidden little Easter egg to people.
Yeah, that's really, really...
Mick Gordon is a game music god now.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially after his work on Killer Instinct and then going into Doom. Damn.
Yeah, and he also did Wolfenstein New World Order, or The New Order.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, just...
And that was that was really good, too.
Just out of nowhere, he just is so good.
Crazy stuff. Let's see, what other news is there going on? Well, we could talk about Golf with Friends added a new stage.
Yeah, we played that before we started the podcast recording here.
Officially, the course is called Twilight. Unofficially, it's called Fuck You.
or the LSD course, as I like to call it.
You know what? There was some holes that were absolute bullshit. But then there were other ones that were like, and I don't know if you noticed this, but at the beginning of each one, there's a little placard that says, like, course idea by blah, blah, blah.
Ah.
So I guess, like, these are all, like, fan-submitted ideas for holes.
Well, yeah. Fuck all of those people.
So.
Insane. It's fun as hell. I can't wait to play it some more. I can't wait to see what else comes from Golf with Friends.
I can't wait.
Yeah, this... This game, it's actually really surprisingly fun. I like hopping on in there.
This game, I think.
Yeah, you do.
It's definitely one of those. It's cool to have like a huge group of people like on the same call and just playing together. Like it's neat.
Just cursing at each other.
Yeah, basically. Well, when you put collisions on, yeah.
Oh
yeah.
God,
special
you motherfucker.
Yep.
Let's see. A little bit more news. Xbox One has once again dropped its price. It is now $299 for 500 gig models, $349 for 1 terabyte. So it looks like they're dropping price before E3. Do you think we might see a slim model come at E3?
Probably.
The rumors.
Probably. I think I would be extremely surprised if they didn't put out some other hardware model, because Sony's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
They essentially have to, like, if they don't do it, then everybody's going to be pissed.
Well, there's been rumors of two different new pieces of hardware coming from Microsoft, one being just a slim version and the other being 4 times more powerful than the Xbox One that's supposed to hit next year, but E3 is only 2 weeks away, so I guess we'll find out then.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
It's getting close.
Shit. Yep. It's like right around my birthday. Yeah. My birthday's coming up. I'm going to be old.
Yeah, you are.
Not as old as some of us.
I know, but still. Very true. It's depressing.
You're dying. last bit of news I have is Sony has released the news for PlayStation Plus for the month of June. It is a mix of high highs and low lows.
You got them low lows?
Let us start with the Vita, which once again gets stuck with another PSP game. Granted, it's God of War Chains of Olympus, but still, it's a PSP game.
Mm.
Yeah. Kind of shitty.
Well, what are they going to give them? Vita games? There aren't any.
The other game is Little Deviants, which is just laughable.
For half a second, I thought you were going to say Little Nicky.
No.
Listen, I would play that game.
Not on this episode. But Little Deviants was a launch title for the Vita, which is basically a tech demo for what the Vita could do. Mm. So all the people who forgot that the Vita has like touch screens and a rear touch panel, they could finally figure out what the hell those things do. I think it's you know, God of War is always good, but the fact that it's an old PSP game just kind of ruins it for me.
Yeah.
I think the Vita kind of got the short end of the stick this month. PlayStation 3 is getting Siren Blood Curse, which is pretty good. It's getting all 12 episodes, so the full game there. And then Echo Chrome, which another decent game, but it's from 2008.
Wow.
Same with Siren. They're both very old games. I mean, they're good. And Siren, that's one I never thought would see. free game, so rock on for that. PlayStation 4 is the jaw dropper. First off is Gone Home Console Edition, which we've covered on the show. It's a cool game, but that's clearly not the big hitter. The big one, NBA 2K16.
Whoa.
Wow. Huh.
Yeah.
I'm not even a console player, and I know that's pretty damn big.
Yeah, 2K16 is free with PlayStation Plus for the month of June.
Wow.
So that's... people have wanted a heavy hitter and a AAA title for the PS4. Well, y'all got one.
Damn.
This is a huge one.
That is a huge one. Oh. Steve will be losing a lot of sales.
Isn't it heartbreaking?
Ugh, man, I weep every night.
Yeah, it's a pretty good month overall for PlayStation Plus.
What's Xbox getting? I don't remember.
Xbox is getting The Crew and fuck was the other one?
I don't remember.
Oh, I gotta look this shit up.
The Crew was the better one, though, wasn't it?
For the Xbox One, yeah.
That's meh.
What the? I know the 360 has XCOM and Super Meat Boy.
Oh, that was I was more excited about the 360 ones.
What the hell was the other one on Xbox? Why can't I
remember
this? I
really need to get
this?
My 360 repaired. I still got Red Ring on this thing.
Seriously?
Well, yeah, but all the 360 games are backwards compatible now.
Not
Goat Simulator.
Didn't Goat Simulator just get a new space thing?
I know it was announced. Space? Is it out?
I believe
for
it
PC.
Is. Yeah.
Let's find out.
It was called Goat Simulator Waste of Space.
Did it release, though?
I think it did.
I have it in my Steam library. Let's find out.
Oh, yeah. Steam summer sale's coming up.
That's not good.
For your wallet.
Well, I'm moving.
Oh, even worse for you.
I'm literally moving in like 2 days.
Yeah, he is.
Mm.
But yeah, Rez, he was saying that all the 360 games with gold, those are all backward compatible.
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
Right.
That would it.
Yeah, I was glad to see Doom and Doom 2 is Xbox One compatible now.
So is Doom 3.
Well, that game sucks. I can safely say that now. That game sucks.
It's still compatible.
Yeah.
Where is... There's Goat Z?
What?
Oh, that's the zombie one.
Yeah.
Waste of space. There it is. It's out. It was out last week.
Nifty. Well, hopefully it makes its way to console as well.
Probably.
All the other ones have, so figure that one will make it eventually. That's all the news I got. Do you guys have any recent news that y'all want to chat about, or should we move on to our reviews? Because we have
a lot of reviews.
I got nothing.
Let's just do reviews.
All right. Let us start. I'll just go down the list. First up is Tropico 5 Penultimate Edition, developed by Hemimon Games.
H-A-E-M-I-M-O-N-T.
Hemimon? Developed by
Something like that.
Hemimon Games, published by Calypso Media. I knew that one. Released May 24th for $49.99. This is basically the Tropico 5 that we all know and love. You've played it on PC or you've played it on PS4, Xbox 360. It takes the sim game that you know and love, basically SimCity in the tropics with a dictator that you could get into wars. And it adds in the big cheese and the hostile takeover add-ons included, as well as 5 exclusive Xbox One maps, all for $50.
Looks real nice. Runs very, very well.
Yeah, the game is gorgeous. It's fun. I made my family, the lineage, San Marco Luis.
Or SML.
SML.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Because I've got to be that guy.
I liked it. It was a slow burn.
Yeah.
It was.
A lot of options in the game. They have the campaign mode where you go from scenario to scenario. They have the special DLC scenarios that were included with the game. They have the exclusive ones. They have a sandbox mode where you can just go in, do what you want. You basically start off with a tiny little settlement, and from there you can add farms and mines and ranches, and over time you gain your independence from the royal crown, I guess. You can buy your independence, or you could fight for your independence, and then you just progress through history with things getting more technologically advanced. You could get invaded. There could be wars, natural disasters. It is basically SimCity with fighting possible.
It's kind of like SimCity with civilization, but in a tropical setting. It's really fun.
It's this is something that I originally got for Pappy before he quit. So the fact that I had to tackle this one was pretty neat, because I've never really done these games before. It was a really enjoyable game. If you are into these kind of games, you don't need to hear our recommendation, because chances are you already have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if anybody that is a simulation type of gamer, they're already well familiar with Tropico. So.
If you've never played a game like this before, if you've ever played like SimCity on the Super Nintendo, that's where I come from those days.
This will essentially blow it out of the water.
It's fun. Give it a try. $50 might seem kind of steep, but it has plenty of additional content, the new exclusive maps and scenarios, and you will waste weeks of your life on this.
Oh, yeah.
It's definitely $50 worth of content.
Easily.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
Next game on the list is called Subnautica, developed by Unknown Worlds, published by Grip Games. This is not an official review. I'm going to read this line from the email. It says, please remember Subnautica is an Xbox game preview, early access state, far from completion and in no way ready for a traditional review. We do, of course, welcome previews, but again, request that the game's unfinished nature be respected. So that I'm leading off with that disclaimer before saying that, holy shit, this game is gorgeous.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
Yeah.
Like, it's basically one of those survival simulators, a lot like, you know, Ark or Solus Project, where you start off in a spaceship that is on fire and crash landing. You jump into an escape pod and you land in the ocean. You put out a fire and then go. That's the direction the game gives you.
Yep.
Sounds good.
It's a lot more based on underwater, obviously, because of the name.
Yeah, you'd think with a name like Subnautica, there'd be like a lot of aerial stuff, but no, believe it or not.
So it is you can make nautical related. Once you land,
I honestly don't know. I have been playing this game for hours, and I still don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I am having a blast.
See, but most of those games, that's exactly how it is. Like, yeah. I have no idea what I'm doing, but this is great.
It's like this thing that when I played Ark, is that I played for hours and I had no clue what the fuck I was doing. But there's people out there who know what the fuck they're doing. I had a friend come over and show me his Ark. Like, the community he has with some friends on a private server with, like, all these towns and villages and all these tame dinosaurs. And I'm like, I learned how to shit in a hut. So I know that there's people out there who know what the fuck to do in Subnautica. And they're enjoying it a lot more than me. But that's not to say I'm not enjoying it.
Right.
Well, the good mark of a lot of those types of games, a mark of a good one, is if you can just jump right into it, not know what the hell you're doing, and still have the time of your life as you slowly learn how to do things, that's the mark of a good game.
Yep.
Yeah.
Instead of it being flooding your screen with tutorial messages, oh, you need to do this, you need to do this, you know?
Yeah, there are a handful of different modes in the game. There is the basic survival mode where you have to worry about oxygen and your health and food and hunger. There's also a more casual version, which is basically the same exact game, but it removes hunger and thirst.
Ah.
So it's just less to worry about. You still have to maintain your oxygen and stuff like that. There is a hardcore mode where not only do you have to worry about everything, but it doesn't give you any warnings when you're running low on oxygen.
Ooh.
So you got to pay attention to everything. Plus, if you die, game over. Clearly, it's hardcore.
Hmm.
And then there's just like a free do what you want kind of thing with nothing to worry about except having fun and exploring.
A creative mode, in other words.
Basically. The game is still incredibly early. They have stressed multiple times that is in an early access state. It's only $20 in early access or Xbox game preview. I don't know if it has any kind of solid release window of when it's supposed to exit early access, but you can tell that they are still very clearly working on it. The initial load times can be fairly long, but once you get into the game, there's basically no loading. You will see some pop-in textures. That's kind of to be expected because it's a very, very open world.
Mm.
And again, it is drop-dead gorgeous. The first time I popped out of the water at night and looked up at the moon, I just immediately said, Xbox, take a picture. And set that as my desktop or my home screen background. It's
wow.
If you are into these types of survival games, this is definitely one that you should jump in on early access. Enjoy it before it's ready. Get the lower price. You know, get yourself familiar with the game.
Or is this on PC as well?
I'm sure it's already on PC. From what I can tell, it's supposed to be on Xbox and eventually PS4 as well. But PlayStation doesn't have any kind of early access or game preview program on it. So we're getting to enjoy it. Xbox for now.
I'll have to put that on my check it out list.
It is. It's a blast. It's gorgeous. If you are into survival games, absolutely check this. Any questions?
No. I think you covered everything.
I'm literally putting this in my list right now.
Nice. Yeah, look it up on Steam. I'm pretty sure it's on Steam.
Yeah, it's on pretty much like, I mean, anything's pretty much on.
Do my work, minions. Look it up.
Minions.
It's probably on there. I'm not going to look it up because it's probably on there.
Next game is called Retsnum. Developed and published by Somi.
Oh, this is a weird one.
One dude in South Korea. Just one dude made this game. It released May 24th on the PlayStation 4 for $4.99. It is a pixel graphic platform puzzle game where the main, the core mechanic of the game is using a mirror to flip the stage. So like,
but just a section, like a square that is
like
surrounding
a 10 by
character.
10 square around you completely reverses mirror stuff.
Okay, that's weird.
It is really weird, but it's cool.
It's incredibly hard to describe, but in practice, and once you see it, it's very easy to get the hang of. But because it's easy to get the hang of course, the puzzles are going to be fairly difficult. Like, you'll be in an area with just walls, and you have to figure out how to get out of there, get to different rooms. It is really, really, really awesome game. There is a deep, dark storyline behind it. I don't want to give too much away, but basically, everyone's turned to zombies, and you got to figure out what the fuck happened.
So it's kind of like Fez's rotation, but extremely localized around your character.
Kind of. Instead of having four sides, it's all 2D, and it just flips it.
Okay.
But only that highlighted section.
Yes.
Huh.
And, you know,
this sounds interesting.
There's clearly going to be stages where you have to flip an area and then move and flip part of that area to the new area. It's really, really awesome stuff. And for $5, this is an absolute buy it if you're into puzzle platformers.
If you're into puzzle, yeah.
I do love me some puzzle games.
If you're looking for an action game, walk on.
This is not your cup of tea.
No, this is very, very reliant on the puzzle portion.
Next game in this hefty lineup of PlayStation titles to talk about is Crazy Crazy Strike Bowling EX. Developed and published by Core Cell Technology, released May 31st on the PlayStation 4 for $12.99. They have confirmed to me that they are working on an Xbox One version. I think this might be a game that you might want to grab on PlayStation, though, because first off, it is a port of a PlayStation 3 game that was a Move title. So, of course, the PS4 version has Move compatibility.
And that's important.
Yes, because it is a bowling game. I tried playing this with controller, and it is very much playable with the controller, but the controls are very finicky. Like, you need to nail things perfectly. And I don't know if it was because of my setup or if it was the game, but I felt like there was just a little bit of lag where I would hit the button and the action would still take like a quarter of a second longer. It's very possible that it was my TV setup. I didn't check if I have game mode activated, but I'm pretty sure I do. But we know modern TVs and lag can always cause problems.
Yes.
Playing with the Move is like a whole new world. It's basically Wii Bowling.
A whole new world.
My second game using the Move controller, I bowled a 300.
Damn!
So yeah, so you should probably use the Move.
Yeah, if you have a Move controller and the camera, definitely it's fun. It's $13. It is anime styled bowling.
It is very waifu.
Is there like power ups or anything in there?
There are a multitude of different modes in the game. First off is just normal bowling, clearly. Okay.
Oh, totally normal.
Then they have crazy bowling, which can throw obstacles, power-ups, prizes on the field that you could pick up.
Okay.
They have a challenge mode where you have to go through, like, the one is to, like, get two strikes in a row or to get two spares in a row or get, like, 30 points, a score of 30 or more within, like, 45 seconds. Just a bunch of crazy different challenges. So there is a lot to do. I wish they had like an actual campaign or career or something like that in there.
A bowling league mode.
Yeah. Like Brunswick Pro Bowling had a career in it. It just, for the most part, it's going to be like a party bowling game. You can level up after, you know, you don't really increase your stats, but you can earn credits to unlock like different outfits and clothes and balls that can change your stats.
Huh.
So the option is there to, you know, improve your bowler. There are, I believe, six characters in the game, if I'm remembering correctly. Most of them are just like, you know, anime boy, anime girl, anime woman with giant tits, and then a fucking bear.
Because why not?
Because it's a
giant bear.
Yeah.
It's a fucking bear.
Who is bowling? Bear is bowling. How can this be?
I bowled a 300 with a fucking bear.
Dude, and the funniest thing is I walk into the other room and he's playing this game and I just see a bear holding a bowling ball and the bowling ball is like, it fits in his palm. Like, it looks so outrageous. Like
it's like you heard me playing a game, so you came in to look at it, you stopped, your brain processed what was going on, and you just turned and walked away.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, I don't know what's happening. The game is a blast. If I'm going to give the game a try it. If you have a Move controller, it bumps it up to a buy it. I'm undecided on a potential Xbox version. Like if it has Kinect controls, that could be interesting. If it's just controller only, you might be better off just grabbing it on the PS4.
Yeah,
because again, it was fun on a controller, but it felt better with the Move.
I'd be interesting if it worked with the Kinect.
Yeah,
I'd be interested to see how that worked.
Oh man, next game again for the PlayStation 4 is called Shadow Blade Reload, developed and published by Dead Mage. It released May 31st for $14.99. This is a 2D action hack and slash ninja game that I love.
Dude, it is so fluid. The art style is really cool. They have these like comic book-esque cutscene things. Oh, it's just, it's really neat. It kind of reminds me of like a Ninja Gaiden-esque kind of thing, but it's very fluid, very, very fluid.
Is this another system? Because this sounds really familiar.
It might be. I really don't know. Look it up. I'm talking. You guys can look this shit up.
I know what it is.
I know I'd have to do things.
I know what it is.
Bitch, Rez. Jesus Christ. Yeah,
hey, you invited me.
I think Chris was saying it's like Ninja Gaiden mixed with Super Meat Boy.
Yeah, because there are like some of the level designs, like it's very much reaction.
Wall jumping and spike pits. Thankfully, there are a plethora of checkpoints. So if you do die, it's not going to set you back too much. There are orbs to collect in each stage. There are 3 hidden kanji that you could collect in each stage. Collecting those, as well as a fast time, can give you a better rating. Dying will obviously knock your score down. The goal is clearly to get S ranks in every stage, as well as to try and beat the goal time in each stage.
Oh, wow. This reminds me a lot of that new Strider game that came out a while back.
Yeah. It's kind of like that.
This is fluid. Holy cow.
Except this is stage-based instead of open, like, Metroidvania style.
Yeah. It's cool. I dig it. I like it a lot.
The controls are incredibly responsive.
Very tight.
I normally hate playing stuff on the PlayStation controller. I was doing good. Like, I was flying through some of these stages. Just, it's a fun game, and it's satisfying when you, like, double jump, chuck a shuriken into a guy's face, and then hit a down attack and land on a guy and slit his neck.
It's very cool.
In, like, a 1 second span.
This game, I think, even just the way that some of the, some of the animations are for, like, some of the executions and all those kind of things, they make you feel more powerful than what you feel like you're doing. You know what I mean? Like, it's like they're so they're very impactful.
The animation is just so well done. It is.
Oh, yeah.
We've said fluid about a dozen times, and it's just a very fluid, fast moving, satisfying game.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a very, very good looking game. I like it a lot.
This is a 100% buy it. Yes. The trailers for the game also showed logos for Xbox and Wii U. I don't know for sure if they're still coming or not. I inquired about it, and they said that they're just focusing on PlayStation right now. So it's possible it could come to Wii U and Xbox in the future, but if you don't want to wait, I wouldn't wait on this one. This one is fantastic. This is going to be a tough one to beat for the year for me. This is going to be up there with some of the other classics that we've covered this year already, like Jump Jet Rex.
This is definitely
good. This is a heavy hitter.
I like the look of this a lot.
Yeah, Dead Mage has my attention, I will say that.
Yeah, I agree.
The final game in the PlayStation 4 lineup of this week is called Score Rush Extended. This was kind of a late one. I only got it a couple hours ago today, like early this afternoon, and I was like, well, I might not be able to do it today. I think I have played it long enough, in depth enough to give this a firm opinion. Developed and published by Zona Games, it released May 31st on the PS4 for $11.99. It does have a launch discount, and if you are a PlayStation Plus member, you could get it for $8.39. This is like Geometry Wars and a bullet hell had a fucked up mutant baby that was tripping on acid.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And dude, has ADHD.
Yeah. This game was really enjoyable, even though like there's a lot of parts where you feel like you're going to get really fucking lost, and you do. The thing that I really like about this game, as opposed to some other bullet hells that I play or I have played in the past, is there's this tiny little diamond that's a part of your ship, and that is your hitbox. So you know exactly
there's a clear indication of your hitbox.
Yes. Okay. So most of the time when I play a lot of bullet hells, I'll think that I'm dodging stuff, but like I won't be aware of what the hitbox is. And obviously in bullet hells, you have to be really precise on that kind of stuff. This one, I will say as well, was very tight. Like, the controls were like, I never felt like I overshot when I wanted to get where I wanted to go. At which they also have another button that you can hold down to kind of slow it down a little bit more, too. So if you
like
to do
fine
really,
tune moving.
Yeah. It's, oh man, it's cool. And now, granted, it has a multiplayer aspect to it where you can actually have four people on the same screen playing at the same time.
I unfortunately only own one PlayStation 4 controller, so we could not test that out. I'm kind of scared to try that, though.
Yeah, because I feel like it's hard enough following your character single player, let alone if you were going to add three more people in the mix. I just feel like it would be just absolute utter chaos.
Yeah, it is. It's already insane. There were many, many times playing it where I just ignored 99% of what was going on the screen, and I just looked at my little diamond hitbox and made sure not to hit any of the bullets.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of guessed where I was aiming.
Yeah, and one of the power-ups that you end up getting is like this little turret-esque, what do they call them, Joe? The little circles that follow you?
They were options.
Options. Yeah. So you get these little turrets, and they will just fire in the general direction of where you're shooting. But what's interesting about it is you essentially snake every time that you pick one up. So they just trail behind you. And eventually, you can have up to what of it? It was like 30-something of them?
32.
Yeah. So once you get like a real long trail of them, now those don't count towards your hitbox, because that would be stupid.
Yeah.
But what I found was really interesting is in boss battles and stuff like that, you had to attempt to try and wrap yourself up, coil yourself a little bit so that all of your bullets would be
focused on
one area. But you couldn't stay in one spot more than a second because there was just so many fucking bullets. so there's this really interesting aspect of just thinking about where your route is going to go so that you can still maintain where you're trying to shoot. It's cool.
It's kind of like Gradius bullet hell in a sense.
It really is if you were to take a Raiden or something like that and mix it with Geometry Wars.
Now, is this vertical or horizontal?
It's a vertical scroll, but there's the horizontal screen is actually extended, so you can kind of you move to the right and it'll extend over a little bit further and then eventually stop. So there is some screen that is not visible.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And
which adds another
gameplay
layer
wise,
it
is very simplistic.
Yes.
There is move and fire, twin stick shooter, so the two sticks.
Okay.
There is the button to kind of move slow motion for the fine tune moving. It doesn't slow the action down, it just slows your ship down so you get the fine tune movement. And then there's a button for your nuke bomb, which you only get three of. You don't get any back if you die. You don't replenish any with pickups. You have three, and that's it. They are your oh fuck button of the game.
No, that is literally your one oh fuck button, and you only get to do it three times.
Yeah,
your three wishes. Yes,
yep. You have three lives.
Ooh,
but if you die, you're kind of fucked.
Right? Oh yeah. So the skill cap of this game is pretty much once you die once, you can't recover, because all of those little orbs that I was talking about that are turrets that follow you around, essentially, when you die, you lose them all.
Yeah.
Oh.
So you are obviously now gimped as far as power level is concerned. On top of that, you have actual power-ups that that will affect your personal damage output. Once you reach a certain point, when you go to pick up one of those power-ups, it acts as a small detonation, and it will remove a bunch of bullets from the screen.
Sends a shockwave out.
Right.
Okay.
So, once you die once, you lose a bunch of those power-ups, so now you have to try and regain all those power-ups, but now you're instantly getting bombarded with bullets again,
yep.
And you have to attempt to try and clear them, but you don't clear them because you've already lost some power level.
I think when you die, you lose about a third of the total power-up pellets that you've collected. The rest just, like, spread out that you could pick back up. But you cannot get all of them back. So you are definitely missing out on a chunk of them. And once you die, you're just... It's a hole that you can theoretically dig yourself out of
if you're early enough in the game. So. Yeah.
So it's classic, fuck you, get good.
Pretty much, yeah.
I like it.
There are eight bosses, so it's basically, there's no actual, like, numbered waves. You just go.
Mm.
You'll know it's a boss because it takes, like, 2 minutes to kill.
And there's a lot more bullets, and they're coming out of one concentrated area.
I made it to the eighth stage boss without getting hit, and once I got hit once, that was the end of it.
Damn.
I could not recover.
You can't recover.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That said, for $8,
it's good. It's real good.
For $8.39, getting it on sale, it's a no-brainer. Even at $12, it's...
Yeah, I would still buy it.
It's a blast.
Because what was... I mean, Raiden was still... That was a...
50.
That was a $50 game.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I think I might actually see myself playing something like this a little bit more. Just because, like, again, like, having that little diamond and knowing where your hitbox is, that's what makes this game a lot more enjoyable, because it doesn't feel absolutely hopeless. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's just like the hitbox is small enough that you feel like, all right, yeah, I should be able to do this. I think I could pull this off. And then you start doing some really intricate, like, dodges, and you go, okay, yeah, it becomes feasible. You know what I mean? Whereas in, like...
My biggest complaint with a lot of bullet hell shooters is, like you said, the not well-defined hitbox.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's why I could never really get into them, because I was like, well, what the hell should I be looking at with that little diamond?
This is incredibly well-defined.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know exactly what the hitbox is and what you need to keep alive. Doesn't mean you're going to.
Yeah.
Then again, there were plenty of times where I would just snake through a field of bullets, get through to the other side, and be like, how the fuck did I do that?
Yeah, right? Dude, I did that once, too, like, at least a couple times, and I'm just like, I'll take it. Yeah. I should have died there.
Like that big momentary sense of accomplishment. Like, how did I get through that? I am awesome, you know?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I can't believe... Never mind, I got more bullets coming at me.
Never mind that, there's more on the way, yeah.
Yeah, I can't celebrate for too long.
I will say, as always, I hope this comes to Xbox One, mainly because I fucking hate the DualShock 4.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
I hate the DualShock 4.
I actually did not realize how much I hate the thumbsticks on a PlayStation 4 controller until today. Just because, like, especially for that game, my thumb was slipping off of those thumbsticks constantly.
I think if I had my Elite controller, I would have beaten that eighth boss.
Damn.
Yeah. See, and what was the name of that again? Because I'm actually going to look for it on Steam.
It is called Score Rush Extended by Xona Games. XONA. Again, it is $11.99. If you buy it this week, it is $8.39 for PlayStation Plus members. This is another buy it. PlayStation owners have an awesome week of games. That is for goddamn.
What was the name one more time?
Score Rush Extended.
Score Rush.
It's not a difficult name, Chris. Get your shit together.
Maybe it's not on here. That sucks. Who doesn't put their game on Steam?
I don't know.
It's a valid point. It's a very valid point.
It might have been developed, you know, specifically for PlayStation. You never know.
Yeah.
Oh my god. What? Why the fuck? It's only for PS4.
Well, that just makes it where I'm not playing that game.
Hey, it might go other places in the future. Who knows? Maybe the guys at Xona will listen to this and they'll be like, hey, there's people who want this on Xbox and Steam. Let's do it. Let's put it on the platform.
Who doesn't put their game on Steam? I don't understand.
Right there with you.
I don't get it.
Anyway, moving on, next game to talk about is called Among the Sleep. It is developed and published by Krillbyte Studio. It has been out for PlayStation and Steam for a while, but is releasing this Friday, June 3rd, on the Xbox One for $14.99. This is straight up adventure, kind of horror game.
It's creepy.
It's very creepy, but this, like, I don't want to ruin any of the story, yeah. Although chances are a lot of people have checked it out already. The story goes from, like, creepy scary to, like, depressing as the story goes on.
They have a tendency to get depressing.
Because
I will say on Steam, they now have HTC Vive support for it, and ooh. I can see how it would freak you the fuck out with that.
Oh.
Yeah, it works really well with the HTC Vive.
Damn. Yeah, but the monster in this game isn't necessarily what you think it's going to be when the end comes around. And it was like a punch to the gut when I got to the end of the game. It's not a long game. I completed it in about 3 hours.
Yeah.
I feel that the 3 hours was worth $15. Don't go into this thinking that you're going to get like an action game. Think of it as like a movie-like experience.
Yeah.
It is. There's not much for replayability, but the story is fantastic. You are a child, like 2-3-year-old child.
A toddler.
Yeah. It is all done in first person, and you're basically going through a survival horror-ish game through the eyes of a child. So things that might not necessarily be scary to a normal person have a whole different meaning now.
And it definitely gets you into the mindset of a child when you're playing it.
You know, it starts off innocently enough. It's your birthday, and you have cake, and your mom goes to answer the door, and then you could tell things aren't right because, like, the screen starts shaking, and things get weird. But then your mom comes back, things are okay, and she decides that she's going to tuck you in bed with your new teddy bear. And the opening credits are her leading you through the house with this dark fog just following behind you. She puts you in your crib, and then you wake up and your mom is missing. The game is you basically trying to figure out where she is, what happened to her, trying to avoid this hideous monster that you'll routinely see, which scared the shit out of me a few times, I'll say that.
I will agree with you on that, yes.
Walking through the forest area, and I apparently took a wrong turn because I heard, like, the screeching, and the screen started getting fuzzy, and then the camera just swung around, and it picked me up, and the screen went black, and I'm just like, yeah, let me turn the light on.
And that's the moment I had to go to the restroom to check to see if I crapped myself. It's genuinely scary at parts.
It is. It really is. Again, for $15, this isn't going to be for everyone. Achievement hunters, you're going to drop the $15 because it's a 3-hour completion to get 1,000 achievement points. So don't even kid yourself. You're going to buy this. I will say it was neat to check out the credits because our former co-host, Taras Boutre, was one of the Kickstarter backers, so his name's in the credits.
Yep. It is.
Go figure. He was supposed to cover that game, too. I'm going to give it an official try it just because the game is not for everyone. Again, this is more of a cinematic. You need to look at this as a story and not as a game.
Yeah. But it's not a glorified walking simulator either.
Yeah, there's plenty to do and explore, and there's collectibles, the child drawings that you could pick up. It includes the prologue DLC is included with it, which gives more insight as to the family relation in the main game. Again, it's hard to talk about without giving anything away.
It's a game that makes you want to dig into it just to find out more about what's going on.
Yeah.
It just sucks you in.
It's only 3 hours, but it was a fantastic 3 hours.
Yeah.
And fun fact, I was the third person in the world to get 1,000 achievement points in the game.
Go you.
Rock on for me. two more games to talk about. The first one is called Anima Gate of Memories, or Anima. I don't flip a coin. Developed by Anima Project or Anima Project, published by Badland Indie. It releases June 3rd for $19.99 on the Xbox One and the PS4. It will also have a physical release and a collector edition on the PlayStation 4 later in this year. That's going to include the game, an art book with an extended manual, a tarot card deck, a soundtrack disc, collector packaging, and an 8-inch hand-painted figurine, which is definitely on my radar. The game, let me flip the... I wrote down the description of it just because I've been going through so much stuff. The game, you play as a girl known as the Bearer, who doesn't have an official name and a lost past, because that's how things are. You have a book with you named Ergo, which can eventually transform into a human to help you fight. It's an action RPG. The controls are great. Fluid movement. The game is huge. There is a ridiculous amount to do in the game, and it is very open-ended. The story, I'm still early in the story, and it's very, vague, I guess. Like, there's a lot of story hidden in it, in, like, notes and texts and journals that you could dig into it, but the actual, like, the story on the surface is very kind of serious.
Those are my favorite kind of games, that you have to go digging for the real story.
Yeah. I mean, things become more clear as you get through the game, but, you know, it's the whole, the game is the journey. The big thing here is the combat. It is, you know, kind of like an action fighter combat style. Switching between the two characters feels great. Fluid, fun. It feels like an open world Zelda type of game.
Ooh.
There are a couple of issues with the game. The camera could be kind of picky. The lack of structure can kind of make it very difficult to know what to do or where to go at times, because it's very much like it throws you into things and then says go. It doesn't hold your hand.
So there's no like quest log or anything.
But it's so hard to describe some of these games. Like, there's no kind of like checkpoints.
Okay.
Like, it's not telling, there's no arrow with a hand telling you where to go. There's no fast travel with how big the world can get, how open the world can get. It could be a hassle traversing back and forth, but the journey is fun. The visuals are gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. My other real complaint with the game is some of the voice acting and the writing. I have never been so, I guess, creeped out by a book in a game.
Okay.
Because he calls the female character baby way okay. too often. Like,
it's not something you expect from
don't literature. Worry about it, baby.
What, they get Duke John St. John to do the book?
I was thinking more like Ian.
Oh, okay.
Like, what's up, baby? How are you doing?
That's more creepy.
Don't worry about it, baby. It's just kind of cringy. The writing is kind of cringy, but the gameplay makes up for it. The $20 price tag could seem like a lot on the surface, but for how massive the game is, it is absolutely worth the $20. That said, I'm still going to give it a try, it just because games like this aren't for everyone. The lack of direction, the lack of explanation could lead to a lot of people being frustrated. I read a comparison online that says that the game is like a mix between Nier and El Shaddai.
Ooh.
If you've played either of those, it's in that vein. I can agree with that quite a bit. It's just for how small the development team was and how huge the game is, I think it's worth checking out.
Hmm. This is on what systems again?
It will be available on the Xbox One and the PS4 and PC this week.
Put that on the check it out list.
For $20. And then, of course, that collector edition, whenever it comes out, that I gotta crack down. Get my hand.
Add more to the shelves.
Yep.
It really is. It's a solid, fun game. It's just hard to describe because of how vague a lot of it is. I did not beat the game yet. It's a massive game. I have not had the time to 100% game, but I feel I've played enough to confidently say that it's...
How many hours you've put into it so far?
At least 10.
Okay.
Massive. I feel like I haven't gotten anywhere in the... final game to talk about, and this is where Chris is going to come in quite a bit. We have been talking about the pinball arcade seasons recently, and we are finally going to tackle the first 5 tables of Pinball Arcade Season 4. Pinball Arcade is developed and published by Farsight Studios. Single tables are available for $4.99 each, or you could get the entire season of 10 tables for $29.99. Available on damn near every platform in the world.
Pretty much.
The pro version of the tables, which include like operator instructions and, you know, like place the ball where you want, fun shit like that, is $39.99. Include some extra balls, fun things like that. We are tackling the first 5 tables of season 4. The first one is Phantom of the Opera from 1990. Chris?
All right, so I'm going to prerequisite with, I'm not really good at pinball.
Do you want me to give my thoughts first and then you give yours?
You go first, because I'm shitty at pinball, and I'll give you, like, the realist kind of, like, I'm just the casual pinball player.
I'm just going to go off my notes here. It has table layout, gorgeous table artwork, music is neat, obvious anime opera theme. The stage, like the Broadway stage, a layout of the table. I have written down here, Chris lost many balls straight down the middle, and I laughed heartily.
Well, now, I'm going to also... All right. I lose a lot of them right down the middle. Like, it's just, I don't know why. I've tried... towards the end of the tables that I was playing for doing the review, I started bumping the table. Yeah, I started nudging the table to try and get it to not go down the center, but there was a couple times where I just nudged it to go right down the center. So,
that was funny.
I'm not good at pinball. I have a very uncanny ability of getting it to also go down the side ones that you can't do anything about. I do that a lot, too.
I will say the number of times over the hour or so that you were playing pinball that I heard, "God damn it, are you fucking kidding me?" It was impressive.
You should have started a tally.
Again?
Dude, again, most of the times when I screw up on a pinball table, the majority of the time it's because it goes down one of those side things that you can't fucking do anything about, which is really frustrating to me. At least, like, because I remember at least in Pokemon Pinball, I was able to get it so that I could charge up the thing so that if it's going down one of those sides, I could use the flipper on that side to give, like, to do the safety thing. Like, I like tables that I can do that with, but a lot of traditional pinball tables, like, there's no explicit directions of saying, like, hey, hit this thing so that you could activate the buffer that you'll need so that you don't fucking screw yourself over. Like, I just like a lot of pinball tables, you have to sit and just play them and play them
yeah, and
play
them,
to,
out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And learn what you got to do what.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so, Phantom of the Opera.
It was fun. I liked some of the power-ups. I thought it was kind of goofy that, what was it? The multi-ball only gave you one extra ball.
Yeah, it was 2-ball multi-ball. I have down here, only 2-ball multi-ball seems weird.
Yeah, I don't know if there's, like, another version of multi-ball where you get more, but I kept just triggering the one that gave you 2, so that you had 2 total.
Yeah.
On the right-hand side of the, like, right at the end on the right-hand side, there's this huge ramp that opens up. And I guess that's the curtains for the stage. Is that what that is?
I couldn't tell. I it looked like a vault or a crypt or something.
Something like that, maybe. It was very difficult to tell. When the ramp thing is up, almost every time that I hit it in that general direction, it made it go straight down the middle, which was very frustrating.
Because you're a champion.
Yep. I believe that one had a skill shot, but I wasn't good at it. Did it? I don't remember. I think there was only like two or three that had skill shots.
Pretty much everyone does have skill shots. It's just whether or not you get them.
Yeah, and again, I think a lot of the times it's very difficult to figure out like what the hell they are, because they don't. Yeah. Like, it's not like, hey, like, well, some tables will actually have the little animation that'll say, hey, skill shot is this or yeah. whatever. But for some reason, a lot of these tables didn't explicitly say like, hey, here's the skill shot. Like, so that was kind of frustrating.
So what do you think? Phantom of the Opera, thumbs up, thumbs down, kind of in the middle?
I was in the middle of it. Just because the design is cool, but it was frustrating. I felt like I was getting much more frustrated with that table than I was with a lot of the other ones.
Yeah. All right, next table is called the Party Zone from 1991. Pinball table is all of the yellow. The lights can be distracting. Rotating head in the middle might give me nightmares, and his laughing will haunt me forever. Is this a horror-themed table?
No, it's awesome. I loved it.
Ramps and layout are really cool and make me want to keep playing just to watch them. The jukebox with the pinball table synth version of Pinball Wizard is hilarious, as yes. is the dance contest puppet thing. Overall, a very weird table, and not the easiest to play, but very cool to experience.
Yeah, I liked this one a lot. It was weird. It was very weird.
I actually remember this playing the actual table of this.
Really?
Yeah. This table, yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, it's very weird, but it's fun. I liked it.
It is.
Yeah. There was a lot of cool little power-ups that I was getting, and what was it? There was like a robot comedian up in the back right corner or something like that. Like, it was just, it was weird. It was just really, really weird. It's off the wall, but it's fun.
I fucking liked laughing.
Dude, I don't know what I was doing, but I kept hitting like the same thing. I don't know if I kept like going through the same loop or whatever. Yeah. And it was just doing that for about like yeah. 2 minutes.
Oh my Lord. I'm giving this one kind of like in the middle. Again, it's really cool to watch, but it felt really hard to play.
I'll thumbs up it. I liked it. It was fun.
Cool. Next table is called Earthshaker from 1989. I used to play this one as a kid at Sky Lane's bowling alley in hometown before it was shut down.
I also played this at a bowling alley.
I always love the layout of this one. Awesome ramps, busy table, lots to do and play for. Just overall, a very entertaining table that keeps you playing to see what you can do next. Plus, it's an earthquake table. Yeah. Shame the controller doesn't vibrate along with the quakes, but I guess that would get old after like a minute.
Mm, yeah. But when the actual table vibrated, you could feel it everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember
See,
that
and
one.
You know
as a
what?
Kid. That
and
was
I was
fun.
Kind of disappointed by the fact that you don't get the rumble when that happens.
Yeah,
like
I can kind of understand though because
yeah,
if
but
you're...
there's rumble in other tables. Like what was it? There was rumble in the Addams Family one.
Oh,
so like
they
that's
should have
like,
put it in there as an option that you could turn on and off. So.
Yeah. Maybe it is, and I just missed it. Like I don't, and maybe they have it off by default because of how much it would probably rumble.
Yeah,
kills your battery in like 2 minutes.
Exactly.
So I can understand that. We'll have to look into it and find out. But yeah, I was surprised. This one was fun. I actually think this was the one that I might have done the best on. As far as high scores are concerned, there was what? There was the extra flipper on the left.
Yeah.
I think this was the first one that had an extra auxiliary flipper that I played too, of the ones this season that we're talking about.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, again, because I'm a pinball noob, it was a little bit of getting used to, but one
you fucking noob loser.
I got casual. I'm a pinball casual. But I started learning like how to use that side one to constantly just hit it over into that one other ramp on the other side of the table, which was cool. Yep.
Gotta keep that combo going.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's what ended up helping me out a lot on this table, is because I was able to string together a lot more like loops and targets and stuff before inevitably fucking shooting it off to the side. To this, you know, because that's just what I do.
God fucking damn it.
Dude, when I move and I start doing the game stream and stuff like that, I'll buy a table or two or something like that, and you guys can just like, you know, watch me wallow and suffer.
Nice. Next table. Should give this one. I give this one a thumbs up because I've always.
Loved Oh yeah, I really like this one.
Rez, do you want to give this one a rating too?
Oh, Starship Troopers. Oh hell yeah!
I meant Earthshaker.
Earthshaker.
Oh, Earthshaker. Yeah. Back in the day when it first came out, if you played a lot of pinball tables, it was kind of groundbreaking. It did a lot of different stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Good. So thumbs up.
Just all on right. Past experience.
Next table is Starship Troopers from 1997, the newest table of the bunch. Let's go off my notes here. I say fucking awesome table. Crazy ramps, great table layout. The warrior hanging out on the table is awesome. Five ball multi-ball was awesome to watch.
Yeah, it was retarded.
Dot matrix graphics of shooting a bug is great. Getting to pick a high score face is awesome.
Yeah, that
digitized
was really
neat. Movie clips, an alien killing a dude by jamming its claw into the guy's skull.
Yeah, that
giant
was great.
Butt-shaped aliens. Just an overall badass table and one of the highlights, considering I've sadly never seen this table in person. My only gripe is that some of the music was irritating. The one ambient sounding track without the guitar that was just like a 3-second loop, that one annoyed the shit out of me. But other than that, I fucking love that table.
Did you ever get the brain bug to pop out?
I don't remember.
Yeah, you can get the brain bug to actually pop out of the table. It'll like catch your ball. Also, the two flippers on the one side, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I tell you what, man. Like this one, because most of the table is like wide open and there's just a ton of ramps, but they're all like in very particular, like they're narrow passageways. So it's very difficult to just like randomly just hit it and hope that it goes up a ramp. Which is how I play pinball.
Hit and pray.
Poke and hope, man. That's just.
I play pinball like I play my sex. Poke and hope.
Yeah, I mean, like it was cool. It was very. It was kind of difficult to keep track of like what my objective was.
Yeah.
It's like there's certain ones where it's like kill so many of this thing or kill so many of this bug and blah 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 blah, and it's just like, okay, where do I shoot? I think it might just be because in certain aspects I'm sure it's very difficult just to see, because it's a translation of the actual, like you're not physically in front of the table, so it's a little bit harder to get like certain angles on viewing angles and seeing what the fuck's going on. So
yeah.
I could see that being an issue for some people going into playing some of these tables for the first time in digital form. Cause I have played like this one I've played in real life, and then the Addams Family one I played in real life as well. So it there were some things revisiting the digital version where I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that was a thing. Oh yeah. And I forgot that was a thing too. Cause I don't remember it being that open. I thought that there was like an extra ramp that like led up from the right side for some reason, but I'm probably drunk.
This table is all about the color coding of like the different targets when you're trying to go for certain objectives.
Right. And the other thing that I actually thought was kind of cool is like in the center of the field, it has like each bug and the color coding of which bug. So when you lose the game, it'll actually say like, bye-bye. little stuff like that, you know what I mean, like
personality of the table.
Yeah, Yeah, and even like Joe said, like some of the animations that they put in, like the one guy like getting his head, you know, drilled into, was like that was awesome. Yeah. Because I didn't expect that.
That was graphic for a pinball table.
Yeah, and the portraits for the high scores, like that was neat because I'm just flipping through a bunch of them. I'm like, why the fuck did they do this? And then I found one where it was like, it was just a skull in a suit, and I'm just like, yeah, I'll do
that. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
I gotta say, this is a table I would love to see like the Zen Studio work with. Ooh. Just because if Zen were to do something with this, you know the bugs would actually be on the table.
Skittering about. Oh, yeah.
That'd be cool.
So I would love to see if Zen could get like the Starship Troopers license just to compare the two tables. Mm. Because practical tables and full digital tables are such a world apart that I think it'd be interesting to see.
Yeah.
But overall, I'm giving that one a thumbs up as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I dug it. I think there was a lot of potential with it. I wasn't that good at it.
You weren't that good at any of them.
Yeah, I was really not good at this one. but it was fun. So, yeah. I mean, even if you're not that good at pinball itself, you might want to pick it up if you like the movie, just because there's some references and it is, it's fun. It's cool.
The two flipper thing can throw a lot of people really fast, though, because when I mentioned two flippers, imagine the right flipper has another flipper right above it. Like, it's almost kind of part of it, but it can swing independently of it. It's, as a concept, it'll throw you. But once
Able to get that one to activate.
Well, there's two. It has its own separate button on. I'm going at least from memory of the actual table. There's actually two buttons on the right side.
I saw that, but I wasn't playing it myself, so I couldn't really dick around with the controller to see what did what. I wonder if the trigger or something else activated that one. I'll have to fire that one up later and give it a go myself.
Yeah, I'll have to go back to that and try that again then.
But anyway, final table of this week is the legendary and classic 1992's The Addams Family table.
Oh, this table was such my jam back in the day.
First off, I never knew that there were over 20,000 of these tables made.
That is
insane. Like most of the tables that you see in Pinball Arcade, it's like 4,000 were made, 2,000 were made, 100 were made. This one's like 20,000 were made. Holy
This shit. One was popular.
going off my notes here, it is often called one of the greatest pinball tables ever, and who can disagree? It's legendary and the absolute star of the season pack. Fantastic layout and ramps, Addams Family theme and likenesses, voice clips, gorgeous table artwork. It's an all-time classic and worth the season purchase by itself. Also, a massive, massive shout-out to the folks at Farsight for allowing us at SML to check out the gold trim version of the table.
Ooh.
As well. Only 1,000 gold trim tables were ever made after the records that the original table set. And the digital version of the gold trim table was a special Kickstarter backer bonus only. Ooh. So it is an absolute treat that we were able to check it out for ourselves. And again, massive thanks to Farsight for that.
Oh, yeah.
Chris, take it away.
Okay, so this one, man, even if you're not good at pinball, this table is just fucking, it's like the best pinball table that like ever came out. Like it's in it. Cause for the time they were fucking everywhere. Like you couldn't go anywhere without seeing this table. Like this was the one pinball table that like I was very, very familiar with because again, like around, what was it? When did this table come out again?
92.
Mm-hmm. So I want to say like, 98, 99. I couldn't go into any place that had arcade machines and not see this pinball table. I'm convinced. Like, yeah. I saw it everywhere. Fucking everywhere.
This is one of those tables where if you say you have never played the Addams Family pinball table, you're lying because you have played it.
Right. Yeah. Right.
If you've never touched a pinball table in your life, you've still played the Addams Family pinball table.
Or at least watch someone play it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure, like, I'm pretty sure the one that was closest to me was there was a bowling alley that was only like 5 minutes away from my house, like 5 or 10 minutes away from my house, and there was one in there.
I know Boardwalk Boulevard up in Hazleton had it. I played it there all the time.
Top Dog had one.
Top Dog, Top Dog.
Dude, I miss Top Dog.
Ashley didn't believe me that that's a real place.
Top Dog?
Yeah.
What? What about Buzzy's Bazaar? Do you know about Buzzy's Bazaar?
I don't know about Buzzy's
Bazaar. Yo, Buzzy's Bazaar was where I first played Donkey Kong.
Damn.
Dang.
Well, it was technically, you know, the whole, like, Super Mario, Donkey Kong, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah, that was the first time I ever played that. It was at Buzzy's Bazaar. And they had a ball pit that you could, like, freaking, like, dive into from, like, fucking, I don't know, like, what? 7 feet.
With,
7 or 8
needles
feet
everywhere. Needles, vomit, urine.
Dude, it was awesome. I loved that
Those
place.
Were the days when you could go into a ball pit with syringes and no one cared.
Well,
another
the whole
day
place,
the ball
it was
pit.
Essentially like, well, I mean, you know how Top Dog was set up. It was kind of like that, but it was more like they had more like indoor, I don't know, like they had like ball pits, they had like bounce plexes, they had like fucking a laser tag thing, they had like.
I miss when we were kids.
Yeah, man, it was an
like, our shit was
complex.
Awesome when we were kids.
Yep. I tell you what, man, like it was all about the arcades and stuff like that, because people don't, and there is a huge group of people that just aren't gonna know what the experience is like of just going into a place and be like, oh, here's this pinball machine that, you know, I'm probably going to be really terrible at, but I'm going to play it anyway because there's a million pinball machines.
Here's an arcade. What's an arcade?
Yeah, that's true. That's,
well, at least down here in Roanoke, we have the Roanoke Pinball Museum, and this is definitely one of the tables there. just to get back to the table, I mean, it takes like all the best concepts, you know, that have come out in various pinball tables in one form or another and puts all the best parts in one table.
Yeah,
yep.
This is the table to play if you've never played a pinball game ever in your life. You play this one.
Yeah, and the thing coming out and like reaching up and grabbing the
magnets
ball
on there,
and
bouncing the auto flippers that would take over. Just the Addams Family is the pinnacle of pinball.
Yeah, yep. the fact that when you hear the music play in the background, you hear like da 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 da.
Click.
And the flippers go to that
click with it. Yeah.
a quick hello to Litterbug Rob in the chat room. How are you doing tonight? Good.
Going on. This is like the tail end of this because we're already like 2 hours in.
Something like that. The actual show is probably like an hour and a half right now.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, because we golf with friends.
We golfed with friends.
Yep.
Loft.
Gloss with Franz.
But yeah, the first five tables of this pack, I think, already seal the fact that you should own season 4.
But
if you only had $5, you owe it to yourself to pick up the Addams Family. The Pinball Arcade itself, as an entity, needs to have the Addams Family. If you're a pinball fan and you don't have Pinball Arcade and the Addams Family downloaded, you can go to hell.
Wasn't the Judge Dredd one coming out this season too?
Judge Dredd is, I believe, season 5.
Oh, okay, so it's coming out.
Yeah, that one's not available yet on the Xbox One.
Okay, that's the one that I'm like really, really excited for.
Yeah.
Oh, I may just buy that table. Like, I'm really, really excited for that one.
Well, apparently there's some big stuff coming for Pinball Arcade. I got the newest newsletter that mentions TX Sector is going to be the next table coming out. It just released on Steam, Google Play, and Amazon. Other platforms are under review, and hopefully it'll be coming to consoles after that. And then later in June, they are going to be issuing a press release on Stern Pinball Arcade, which is a lot of people are thinking this is going to be kind of like their Zen pinball because it's supposed to be a lot of the newer Stern tables.
Okay.
Like possibly, you know, the Metallica table.
Ooh.
Stuff like that.
like, I haven't really paid much attention to Pinball Arcade, so I'm going kind of through the back catalog, and I'm like, okay, they got Pinbot, they got Terminator 2. I'm like, you're hitting pretty much points here. Yeah.
I was going to say, pretty much any important pinball table that you could think of, it's in there.
Yeah. Shout out to Litterbug Rob saying that he misses Pepsi Blue and the Creature from the Black Lagoon pinball table.
Oh,
Apollo 13 was a cool table also.
Yeah, that one was cool too.
There's so many good tables that could still come to Pinball Arcade.
Oh.
I have high hopes for this Stern Pinball Arcade. I'm hoping that they have some.
So now are they going to incorporate that into the one that's currently running, or are they just going to have a separate
I think it's
going
to be a completely separate release. There's basically no information about it yet.
Okay.
It's just they said that in June there will be a press release issued. Presumably with actual information.
Makes sense.
And basically, details. All you need to know, they have Pinbot, they have Bride of Pinbot, and they have the Addams Family table. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, available in actual Pinball Arcade.
Yeah.
But we don't know what's going to be in Stern.
Mm.
That's all up in the air. We don't know.
I want some
and
more.
And what was it? And,
I want some
and
more
Whirlwind.
So bad.
Was it Whirlwind?
I don't know. I don't have the whole list. There's like tables in Pinball.
Yeah, there's a lot.
But anyway, that was the first half of season 4. We will cover the other half of season 4 in a future episode. The other half includes the table Cyclone, Jackbot, Xenon, Red and Texas Roadshow, and Safecracker. And then after that, we will move on to season 5. But who the hell knows when? Because we've been busy as shit lately.
Yes. Lots and lots and lots of reviews.
Can you imagine if we had the interview on this episode as well?
It would be long as fuck.
It already is long as fuck.
Well, it's kind of your norm, you know?
Well, yeah. Yeah. That's what happens when you just have a lot of stuff to do, so.
Yeah, when a lot of games to review, a lot of people to talk to. I guess that's going to close up this episode here. Stay tuned later on in this week. I am scheduled to be talking with the folks from 10 Tons. To chat about their brand new game, Neon Chrome, which is out right now on the PlayStation 4 and will be out next week on the Xbox One. It is also available right now on Steam. It is a top-down shooter, kind of like Crimson Land, but with roguelike RPG styles.
It's kind of almost like if Crimson Land and like Hotline Miami Monaco had a baby.
Yeah.
That's like, one messed up baby.
Oh, Litterbug Rob once saw Hooters table for sale. Oh, I would have bought the shit out of that.
God, yes. Damn it.
Wasn't there a Playboy Mansion one, too?
Yeah, there was a Playboy pinball table.
Oh, yeah.
I vaguely remember that one.
There were pinball tables for
everything. Not everything, though.
Yeah, Grant covered that we did not get a Legend of Zelda pinball table.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It instead became like, what did he say, Gladiator?
Something like that.
Yeah, they rebranded it or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember seeing something about that.
Crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. Yep. But anyway, I guess we could wrap up this episode. Rez, it was a pleasure having you join us this week.
Woo, thank you.
And I say pleasure in the loosest way possible.
Loose pleasure. Mm.
Rez, you are a loose pleasure.
Yes, thank you.
Your gaping butthole was wonderful to have on our show. It's whistling in the breeze.
Language diarrhea.
So I guess since you're our guest, you can have the final word for the week. So, Rez, end our show.
Play Fallout. Play Doom. Play the classics. Play more pinball tables.
We didn't even talk about what we're playing. I said what I was playing.
Yeah.
And we talked about Fallout. Yeah, we really did talk about what we were playing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess. I suppose we did.
Yep.
Yeah, play all that shit.
That's all I got. Play games. Play pinball.
Good night. Good night, everybody.
Bye. Bye forever. Bye.